Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Obsession has never been explored in such unique detail as in I Love Dick, Amazon's latest original series. Co-creator and executive producer Sarah Gubbins joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. Our second half hour features one of television's top cinematographers. He works alongside master storyteller Noah Hawley on Fargo, now in his third season on FX, and the acclaimed new FX drama, Legion. Stand by for Chris Lubitsky. One of the most unusual musical journeys in recent TV history is underway on PBS. American Epic, narrated by Robert Redford. Part 2 debuts next Tuesday, and director Bernard McMahon explains the journey an hour from now. Also ahead, Last Man Once Remained Standing, and we remember Roger Ailes. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised, brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Delighted to be with us this Friday afternoon for a 90-minute edition of the program All About Television. A lot of great people coming your way over that span, and we invite you to be in the conversation. I promise you it will be quite provocative today. And if you want to be in the conversation, it's so simple. Just raise your voice, pick up the phone, and dial in at 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number's good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio. Another way you get involved is our chat room. Sign in Apple04 by name, and you will find that at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So use the phone or the room. Either way, you get in the conversation. And while the program is on the air, you can connect to others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. 89 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York, and Sarah Gubbins joins me live right here after these news notes. Last Man Standing wants to stay standing somewhere else. The Tim Allen starring comedy, a Friday night favorite the last six seasons, was canceled last week by ABC. That action happened despite Last Man being the second most watched ABC comedy next to Modern Family. 20th Century Fox Television has launched a search for a new Last Man home. Possibilities include Netflix, Hulu, which kept the mini project going when Fox backed that series, and the Hallmark Channel, which has carried Last Man in reruns since last year. East Los High, Hulu's Emmy-nominated drama on East Los Angeles high school life, will get one final hour-long episode this fall. The series started in 2013, and co-creator Katie Mora will co-direct the finale. She and her co-creator were on this program twice over the last 2 years. And HBO will bring back Animals, the urban creature animated comedy and the former New York Television Festival pilot winner, for a third season next year. Will continue in late night. And that is news notes for today. 20 years ago, an author named Chris Kraus came out with a very provocative book called I Love Dick. Emily Gould of The Guardian calls it the most important book about men and women written in the last century. Well, 20 years later, it has now become one of the most provocative news series on television this year, thanks to its run on Amazon. And joining us live from New York, the co-creator and executive producer with Jill Soloway of that series, Sarah Gubbins. Sarah, welcome in.
Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure, Sarah. What kind of reaction have you gotten since the show started last week?
Well, I just got to say, you say the title effortlessly, and that hasn't always been the case. So I just love hearing you say it, and with such passion. It, like, rolls off your tongue. We've gotten some, I mean, people are really loving the show. It's fantastic. What can I say? Yeah, and they're tuning in, and they're binging it. And that's great.
Has any of the reaction, either you or your co-creator, Jill Soloway, have gotten in the last week surprised you in terms of seeing the show and particularly the storyline in a way you didn't expect or she didn't expect?
You know, when you're making a show like this, you have no idea what people are going to think. And so we were really in our cave over here and had no idea if it was going to catch on or what parts of it maybe people would respond to. But there's been a real overwhelming response by women and men that they feel like this resembles parts of their relationships or times when they've found themselves in the grip of obsession. So I think it's speaking to, you know, you don't have to be a filmmaker in Marfa, Texas, who's obsessed with the cowboy played by Kevin Bacon to actually click into some of the things that are going on the show.
Well, welcome to guest 1247 into our chat room. Simon Apple 04 by name. Glad you're listening. If you have a question or comment, put it in the room or use our phone number, 646-652-2906. How long have you and Jill been working to make this show happen?
You know what? This one was a real quick one. We last year at this time, we weren't even in Marfa, Texas shooting the pilot. So in under a year, we've shot the pilot and the season and delivered it. And that's and prior to that, you know, we came to Amazon about a year ago with the idea and the book, and then a couple months later, had the finished pilot, and they greenlit us to shoot the pilot, and then a couple weeks after we shot the pilot, we had to go ahead to put together a room, and then we're back in production in October. At the end of that, we went back down to Marfa and finished, like, shooting all the exteriors of the series. So, and then 3 months in post, and that was it.
What about the book, and particularly its theme, starting with this idea of obsession, where you have this woman played by Catherine Hahn, which I might add gives one of the continuing group of breakout performances that we have seen women give this year, women and women of color in particular. This
yeah.
year, various shows.
Yeah.
What about the book had you and Joe thinking this could work as a series and it could be true to the author's vision?
First of all, like, the thrust of the book was so, you know, it has an energy and a drive that you can't look away. I mean, you can't stop reading the book. You can't stop wondering what Chris is going to do, and so I knew that was going to be something that really could land in a character, and we would want to watch her for a number of, you know, at least propulse us to, you know, through the first half of the series. And I think that, you know, when we think about women and being overt about their desire and what they want, there's a way in which we think of them as being slightly predictable, maybe a little pathetic, but it, all in all, well-behaved, you know, or containable. And I think the thing about the book was that this Chris Krause, she's never going to stop. And even when you want her to stop, she won't. And that kind of character is so engaging and so compelling to watch. And, you know, at times she's a total train wreck. And at times you just are rooting for her because you want to have that kind of fearlessness about your own life that Chris Krause has. So I think that, I mean, really that and then the triangle, which was so interesting. You know, you have a woman who becomes obsessed with this artist and she starts writing a letter to him. Her husband says, you know, who are you writing to? And when she confesses that she is getting turned on by Dick, rather than him, you know, flying into a jealous rage is what you're predictably going to think will happen, and understandably so, he says, read me more, and gets really turned on by this. So that moment of let's use your obsession with another man to kind of restart our, you know, dormant sex life was something that I had never seen on television. And I think it's really honest. I think it's honest about couples that have been in a marriage for 14, 15 years and love and respect each other, don't necessarily want the marriage to break up, but really don't know how to stay connected and to rekindle the kind of sexual intensity that they both are longing for.
It seems, though, that the obsession angle, while it is a primary
yep.
plot point, is this love triangle between Catherine mm-hmm. Hayes, Kevin Bacon, and Griffin Dunne, who is plays the, mm-hmm. the husband. It seems also that you use it as a jump point to explore the whole world of fidelity, infidelity, relationships by bringing other women and then through them other men into the picture.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like this triangle that's descended on Marfa just illuminates so many other kinds of relationships that are already brewing in this small town. And in some ways, you know, what is going on between Catherine Hahn's character and Griffin Dunne's marriage is seen as kind of, you know, it's kind of fresh, it's kind of honest. There are other characters in the show that really don't attach these ideas of monogamy as very important to kind of sexual pleasure and desire and even what a committed relationship might look like. So as Chris and Sylvair are kind of being pressed to explore their own perceptions of, like, you know, do we believe in monogamy? Is it good for us? There's another generation of, you know, women that are really not even interested in entertaining that question. So it's like we wanted to use that triangle and see how the desire could, you know, leach out onto the entire ensemble. Particularly when Chris kind of starts to really step into her own, how that becomes infectious to the rest of the women in the town.
We're speaking with Sarah Dubin. She is a co-creator, executive producer with Jill Soloway of Amazon's latest provocative and acclaimed new original series, I Love Dick. If you have a smart TV set or a device like Roku, Apple TV, Chromecast, etc., chances are you can get it, see it, and binge it right now. Sarah joins us live from New York this half hour exclusively on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum here with you live from New York. Delighted to have you with us this Friday afternoon. Very hot one again today, 89 degrees at the top of the hour. I understand this weekend temperature goes down dramatically and still absolutely beautiful. Delighted to have you with us. If you have a question or comment for Sarah or the guests coming up in the next hour or so, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Find it on our homepage, blogbookree.com/televised. Guest 1247 is doing. There's a brand new website where you might be able to see the future of television through new TV pilots and web pilots. It's called Terrible, and we've got the person behind it. You will meet him. His name is A.J. Kilborn, and it's not just a website. It's also a series of events taking place here in New York at the main New York Media Center in Dumbo's Brooklyn District. Anyway, you'll meet A.J. Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Sarah, this program is shot exactly where the book says it is, which is Marfa, Texas. How do the people welcome you?
Oh, we had a great time in Marfa. You know, before shooting the pilot, I went down about four or five times and really got to know, every trip you just learn more about Marfa. Despite the fact that it's a town of 2,000, it's got so many different communities, and there's also a real itinerant community of artists that come and go, and I think, you know, we were so welcomed by the town of Marfa. We were able to use a lot of the Marfans as extras in some of the, like, dinner scenes and the party scenes, and we're told so many stories about their town and kind of some of the dilemmas that, you know, they face, and the history, the art history, the kind of legacy of Donald Judd, who really is the one who put Marfa on the map as an art town and an art destination. Marfa welcomed us, and, you know, they poured us their signature ranch waters, and we danced at the Loft Horse and just had a real ball while we were there.
In the interviews I've read that you and Jill have given over the last week, one of the most important things to both of you was to have a writer's room that represent all sorts of views, whether it's lesbian, mm-hmm. women, women of color, men, etc. What was it like, mm-hmm. A, to put that room together, and B, to have that exchange of dialogue, that exchange of viewpoints among the room, especially when it came to some of the most key critical situations of the season?
You know, it was easy to put together a room that was all female, and we were really excited about every writer's kind of what they brought to the room. And for many of the writers, especially those that had worked in television, we worked with there were quite a few playwrights in the room, and some had experience in television, and some did it. But I I think the thing about it was this was a very singular experience for all of them, all of the writers. They'd never been in a room where there were just women, and just women creating a show. And I can't speak for what other writers' rooms are like because I've never been in any other writers' room except this one. But what I was told was that there's just a way in which we got down to business really quickly and we're able to just bring our own experiences without feeling like we had to kind of jockey through a hierarchy or, you know, seek permission to speak or, you know, be in a competitive pitching situation about storylines. It's just we spent a number of weeks just basically figuring out what we thought was going on in the book and what we thought the show might look like, rather than me and Jill walking in and saying, write this show. This is the show we want you to write. Go do it. It was about like figuring out what everybody's response to the material was, and then also kind of sharing the creation of what the show could be. And I think it's better for it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're seeing a lot more of that, where we're seeing more diverse writers' rooms, more diverse directors' rooms, more give and take. And you can see that some of the best shows on television this year have had that great give and take, that great inclusiveness of people, no matter what their background is. Give me a little bit of the Sarah Gubbins story. Is this your first television series that you've done, or the first one where you've had a role where you've actually created it and executive produced it?
Yes and yes. Yes, it's my first rodeo. It's my first time working in television. I come from Chicago. I'm a playwright, and so I came from that world, and then Jill and I were working on a feature together. We were co-writing a feature, and that's when I encountered this, you know, the book, and we immediately started talking about turning it into a show.
Did Jill give you,
the great thing about working with Jill and working with, you know, she does, as she's put together the room for Transparent, she really does believe in bringing in writers that have a very, not just, you know, who are, have diverse experiences, but have diverse levels of experience in television. And I think it brings kind of a real fresh perspective to things. And we also used her crew from Transparent, and they, for the most part, almost the entire crew that shot Transparent came over and did I Love Dick, which really was an amazing thing for a first-time exec, you know, showrunner to be candid, an amazing organism that knew how to work together, that knew how to, like, bring Jill's vision together. And so I didn't have to figure all that stuff out, you know, which was priceless.
Was there anything that Jill, because of her work on Transparent, offered to you about how to, you know, find your voice in television as both creator and executive producer? Or did she give you a lot of leeway, a lot of rope to say, okay, Jill, you know, Susan, find yourself? You know, it's all about discovering your voice and discovering yourself, and we'll help you along the way.
True, and they both live side by side. She has an incredible discipline in how she crafts scenes and really looks for beat changes and even on set when you've crafted those scenes, you know, she's looking for a real authentic moment to be happening. And even if you thought the script was going to work, we could throw most of it out on set and just figure out what it is that needs to happen at any given moment. So there's a great there's just a inventiveness and a impulsiveness that, you know, she really insists on. And I think that's something that she really taught me to look for and to keep working on, is just to stay open and flexible at any given point in the process. And that included editing as well. You know, you might think you're editing a scene one way and then find that the episode really needs it to deliver something else. So she really is constantly, she talks about the script and the show being iterative. You know, it's constantly changing. But we know we arrive on set and we know what we're trying to accomplish, and we've been very rigorous in terms of building the beats and building the story points up until that point. So that's it's a strange alchemy, you know, between being very prepared and being very open to what's happening.
I Love Dick is Amazon's latest original series. It's getting critical acclaim over the last week since it premiered. If you have smart TV sets or a smart TV device like Roku, Amazon Fire, Google Chromecast, et cetera, you can catch I Love Dick anytime you like, 24/7. We've got the co-creator and executive producer of the series, Sarah Gubbins, with us live here in Nueva York this half hour. On Tomorrow will be televised. Simon Appleman will be with you live. Delighted to listen this Friday afternoon. Be involved in the conversation. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Coming up our next half hour, we'll speak another exclusive interview with one of the top cinematographers in television. He works with Noah Hawley, the man behind Fargo and Legion on FX. We're talking about Craig Rubinsky. He will join us live from Calgary, Alberta, Canada in our next half hour. And coming up at the top of the hour, PBS has a new series out called American Epic, about one of the most unique musical journeys that has ever been done. It took place in the 1920s. Robert Redford narrates the three-part series. Part 2 premieres next Tuesday night on most PBS public television stations. And we've got the director of the series, Bernard McMahon. That's all coming up right here in the next hour or so on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And by the way, next Friday we hope to have one of the key writers at TechCrunch, which earlier this week had their Disrupt conference here in Nueva York in the South Beach Seaport. We will find out what they have to say about where smart TVs are at, where they're going. Will virtual reality, augmented reality, become part of television? And what about the idea of choose-your-own-adventure interactive programming? We hope to find out with one of the people from TechCrunch next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Sarah, we've seen this year not only this incredible breakout of new quality and controversial series and also breakout stars, but we're also seeing some very interesting storytelling in the series. For example, Aisha Hines' performance on the ground, the episode where Harriet Tubman, she speaks before a group of white abolitionists for the entire hour. You got an episode, number 5, halfway through your series, it's 10 episodes, where you have a very unique plot line. And talk about this, what happens here, because it's not just one woman's story, it's a bunch of women's stories.
Yeah, it's 4 women's stories, and that episode was written by Heidi Schreck and Annie Baker, who have both experiences in television but really are lauded and established, wonderful playwrights. It's a very formalist episode. Basically, it addresses the history of desire of the 4 major women in the series, and they speak directly to the camera and give us their history in an interactive monologue to the camera. So the conception of the series was of the episode really came out of an idea in the writer's room where we wanted, you know, the audiences to get to know every one of these characters in a particular way. And it was almost as if we asked the characters a question, and what they came back was this episode. And the simple question is really kind of boils down to, you know, when was the moment that you started feeling shame about your desire? And that, I think that's something that all women experience. There's a moment in maybe early adolescence, pre-adolescence, later in life, where they realize the things that they want are seen as, you know, that they're seen as taboo, or they're labeled something, they're judged for wanting. And we thought if we put all of these women together that had very, very, very different in the details, but there was this kind of unified way in which they were experiencing the same feeling, we could kind of link in to something that all women experience. And I think that when you're watching it, you understand something that is kind of universal and is not often talked about. But yeah, it's a fun episode. It's starkly different. Jill Soloway directed it, starkly different from the rest of the series. And it's, for us, it was really fun for that to happen smack dab in the middle of our season. So that you had an opportunity to start getting to know these women and then kind of get a glimpse into their history and their past, and it makes for the second half of the season a little bit more delicious because you're carrying that knowledge with you. And more than anything, I think, you know, it can help you look at women differently and say, like, well, what is their story, you know? What is their letter to Dick? Because the episode is framed as a letter to Dick that each of these women write to the camera.
Yeah. This is the second series in recent weeks, the other being The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu, that really has struck a nerve with women all over the country, both based on controversial novels. One very allegorical, mm-hmm. one very modern, very contemporary, very hip. That's your series. What does the reaction mm-hmm. to both shows say about the ability to put on television very controversial, very provocative, and yet very mature material aimed at women and the rest of us, but also that to say that, you know what, TV industry, we're ready for these kind of stories.
Yeah.
We're ready to see these kind of unique women with shades of gray. We're ready for efforts to showcase different types of experiences that you can agree or disagree with them. You can sort of like slice them into your own life if you want, but they deserve to be told, and they can be told.
Yeah, I mean, I think Amazon understood that from the get-go with us. They really wanted a show that was unlike anything else, and that was the show that we wanted to dream up. And I think that The Handmaid's Tale and I Love Dick and countless other shows in the last year are proving what we all know, that, you know, women's stories that put women front and center, that make women the subject of a series rather than just the object. You know, a woman is not a fully realized character if she is only understood in the ways in which she relates to the male characters. If she's a wife, a mother, a coworker, a nanny, you know, like, this is, we're much more interested in seeing the complexities of a real complicated character. And I think that women have known this for a long time, and men too. But it is like you say. I do think that it's the industry that's catching up, and Amazon understood that. You know, Joe Louis and Ryan Angelina and Nick Hall and Roy Price at Amazon, they all wanted the show to be as wild and free and unfettered as possible, and they really didn't want us to ever cow to these ideas, these stereotypical ideas that a female heroine needs to be likable or, and, you know, solely empathetic or solely someone that you're going to, you know, you think is a candidate for being your best friend, you know, because there's ways in which the complexity of Chris makes her a really hilarious character and also dramatically complex. And I think the flaws are what help us to do that. But yeah, I think I give Amazon and, like, look at Hulu. They understand that, and they're willing to take those chances. I mean, I don't think it's much of a chance. I think it's just good television. I think it's good storytelling when you have interesting characters, and when you're breaking from the kind of fettered, you know, corners that these kinds of characters have been. You know, relegated to in the past.
Where do things stand from here? Has Amazon given any indication that you'll get a second season? And if you don't get a second season, where do you want to go in your TV career?
You know what? It's very early for the announcement, so we're going to see what they say. And after that, I'm just going to keep making some shows. But, mm-hmm. I mean, I will always want to create content where we have strong, you know, we have strong, complicated, multi-gendered, you know, leads. And I don't feel like this is something that either Jill and I were particularly wanting to do a one-off on. I think this is how we want to tell our stories, and these are the kinds of characters that we want to populate our stories with.
Kevin Bacon, Catherine Hahn, Griffin Dunn, and others star in I Love Dick. It's Amazon's newest series. It's quite provocative, it's quite adult, and it's definitely much worth your viewing. And you can catch it if you have a smart TV set and also a smart TV device like Amazon Fire TV, Roku, Apple TV, and the rest. For more details about the program online, here's where you go, www.amazon.com. That's www.amazon.com. I Love Dick. The episodes now are available, and they have been for the last week. Sarah Gubbins, the co-creator, executive producer with Jill Soloway of this very unique series. Thank you again for joining us. Congratulations on getting the series off the ground. All the very best, and hopefully this is just the beginning, not only for you with your TV career, but also for this series in terms of where it can go. I hope it'll run really, really long. It's been a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome. All the best to Jill and everybody, cast and crew. Take care. Have a great weekend.
Ciao, ciao.
Sarah Gubbins, co-creator, executive producer of I Love Dick from Amazon, joining me here in New York. More from Bobby Televise coming up, but first, some fine thoughts from the people at Audible.com. We were talking a little bit about Transparent, the other series that Jill Soloway is involved with, award-winning series, Golden Globe Emmys, etc., and one of the big reasons why is the brilliant performance by Jeffrey Tambor. Well, Mr. T has come up with a brand new book, which you can get through Audible.com. It's called Are You Anybody? And he narrates it. And right now, that can be your free audiobook when you sign up for a 30-day trial at Audible.com. Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment and information. With over 180,000 titles to choose from, you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio. So remember, you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. It's audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook, 1 month trial of service, and great customer service from Audible being part of Amazon.com. So check out Audible.com and find out why it can transform the way you hear the world. One more time, audibletrial.com/televised. We come back on the top cinematographers in television will join us live from Calgary, Canada, from Broadway and Legion, both executive produced and done by Noah Hawley, Craig Robuski. And coming up later, PBS's American Epic. It's a very unusual musical journey that's finally seeing the light in recent weeks on public television. Bernard McMahon will join us at the top of the hour. All that coming after we pause for web identification. You are connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com. More than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for the Don S. McClure Show. Take a listen to Don, and he'll get to the latest advice when you need it, and the right advice, too. That's the Don S. McClure Show, coming up later today, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, that's BTR available 24/7. At YouTube.com. Welcome back to part two of our 90-minute edition of Smart Televised, wrapping up your week. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. If you have a question or comment for our guests ahead, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. It's available at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Guest 1247 still in the room. It's been a very big year for master storyteller Noah Hawley. Fargo's now its third season, went 9-10 on FX. And Legion, his brand new series based on the Marvel superhero, has won sensational reviews. Some critics are calling it one of the year's best new series. My next guest is involved with both as their director of photography. Joining us live from Calgary, Alberta, Canada, where Fargo is produced, cinematographer Craig Wobleski. Craig, it's good to have you with us.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
What about Noah makes him a great person to work with? And a colleague to do his programming for?
Well, I mean, Noah is, as you said in your introduction, a master storyteller. I mean, he just has a knowledge of human nature and behavior that is unlike anyone I've ever worked with. And on top of that, he's also an encyclopedia of knowledge of filmmaking history, of cinema in general. So the combination of having a writer who is so incredible with language and so incredible with visuals and so knowledgeable about visuals really makes his scripts just a dream to shoot.
I want to make sure, Craig, that we get both Fargo and Legion, but because Fargo is on right now and doing very well in his third season, let's talk about that first. What's it been like to do the third season of the show? Do you feel that because of the way the first and then the second season did so well with both critics and viewers alike, that you constantly have to top yourself, you constantly have to top, like, what cinematography can do?
Well, there's always a lot of pressure, obviously. I mean, I think any show these days with the quality expectations of the audience, I think any show feels a lot of pressure to deliver a product that that rises above. And Fargo, obviously, with its incredible legacy of seasons 1 and 2, obviously has additional pressure in that front. But, I mean, I can only speak for myself in that, you know, my greatest challenge on Fargo is to rise to the level of the material. I mean, the scripts are so amazing, and the performances are so incredible. You know, the cast this year was just unbelievable. I mean, we had just top-notch performances across the board, and that really, you know, raises the bar for everyone. So the biggest challenge on the show is, quite honestly, just to rise to the level of the material.
Before you took it on, did you see the Joel Ethan Coen film, or did you decide, I really have to follow what the scripts dictate, or I really have to follow my own vision here?
Well, the scripts, I mean, if you read a Fargo script, they're incredibly visual and incredibly well thought out. And they really, I mean, it jumps off the page at you. But obviously, you know, we are certainly given a lot of rope to bring our own voice to the table, and we do it every opportunity. But, you know, everything we do on the show, as with all of Noah's shows, have to be in service of character and story, because that's what the audience will attach to. I mean, the visuals are obviously an incredibly important part of the equation, certainly for me, but you know, it all has to serve the character and story and drive the narrative forward in a way that keeps the audience engaged with the characters.
Give me an example of a curveball that was thrown at you with the script in terms of how you set a particular sequence up or what you did with a particular camera shot.
Well, one of the biggest challenges on Fargo is, I mean, what part of what defines it as a television show amongst all of the other shows out there is we are as defined by what we don't do as what we do. And, you know, it's very easy to look at a scene and visualize it in a way that can be, quite honestly, overly elaborate. You know, I mean, as a cinematographer, obviously, I want to use the tools to their fullest. But on Fargo, there's such a perfect target to hit in terms of what is the sweet spot in terms of tone and mood that it's easy. The curveballs are constantly thrown at you, actually, because it's all about hitting that perfect tone that strikes the balance, that, you know, Coen-esque balance between humor and violence, between, you know, comedy and tragedy and all those elements that have to blend perfectly to create that Coen-esque Fargo world. So that's probably the biggest curveball we get thrown, is every scene you have to really strike that balance and walk that tightrope between all those elements so the show doesn't ever become something that doesn't live in the Fargo world.
And oftentimes that violence, that line gets crossed between humor and violence so fast, so quick, almost like, you know, you turn it for a second and voila, here it comes at you, that you really have to stay on your toes depending on how the scripts go.
Oh, most definitely. And, you know, that's we make a point of on the show never making too much of the violence. You know, I mean, we always, whenever we have a stunt sequence or a moment of violence in the show, it has to be presented in a way that these things happen in real life. I mean, when something extreme happens to a person in the real world, it happens instantaneously and it comes out of nowhere generally. And that's largely the way it works in the Fargo world, is, you know, these moments have to be sudden and impactful in much the way they are in life. I mean, we never want the show to be melodramatic, and we never want to tip our hand too much. So, you know, in terms of the photography, it's always a matter of playing those moments as something real. And also, point of view is such a critical element of the show that we have to be careful with our point of view of how these events are presented. You know, I mean, we can't ever make it, you know, a big cutty stunt sequence, because that's just not the show. And it also doesn't speak to the point of view and doesn't keep the audience with the characters. You know, when we start to show our hand too much with the camera, it bumps the audience out of the story, and we have to just be focused on character and story and keep the audience with the characters and not have our signature get so strong that it starts to override the story.
I read a long time ago, actually it was a Turner Classic Movie feature, where I read about, I saw Cicely Tyson talk about, you ever seen the film Sounder?
A long time ago, yeah.
scenes in that movie is the scene shot by John Alonzo, the great cinematographer, where Cicely Tyson is on the porch of her house, and she sees the dog sounder from afar, and she gets this sense that her husband, who's been in jail for a long time, is finally coming home, as he is. And you see her, and she starts to run toward him. And it's one of the great scenes where that face just blows up in all sorts of ways at the same time. And it was a scene that John Alonzo, like, stuck with the camera, stuck with her running until she finally embraces Paul Winfield, who plays her husband. And at one point, after that scene was shot, Tyson heard from Alonzo, you know, we may have to do that scene over again, because I felt that I was crying so much at the scene that there were tears in my eyes. I may have been tears in the camera. And she was like, oh, my God, I can't do this scene again. Not after I, like, gave it my all and, like, left it in the camera. Luckily, by the way, that didn't happen. What you saw in that film was exactly the way that scene was played out. I said to them, I wonder, like, when you see performances like what you see in front of your camera, do you ever make split-second decisions like, I'm going to stay with this shot longer, or I'm going to move the camera in maybe in a way I didn't expect because I'm just so moved by this performance?
Well, that's a huge part of it, is, you know, responding to what is happening in front of us. I mean, that's one of the great privileges I feel of my position on the show, is that I'm sort of in the front row seat for these incredible performances. And our camera operators, Daryl Hartwell and Tim Milligan, are, you know, even closer. They're one seat ahead of me. And they're the ones who are responding very specifically to the performances. And they have great intuition about that. And they really feel it. And when you've got, you know, we also shoot the show on very short focal length lenses. So the camera's very close to the performers. It's a very intimate situation. And I love watching the camera operators respond to those moments, because you see that they're so engaged in the story and they're just so into it that they're just feeling that performance and just really finessing the shots. And it's something that's impossible to predict, and you just have to be there in the moment on the day. And, you know, that story you mentioned is exactly what happens every day on Fargo, where, you know, we have to be so aware of whose scene it is and whose point of view it is, and to make sure that we never pull the camera away from the story. You know, it's the great cinematographer Conrad Hall was asked the question once. He says, how do you know where to point the camera? And his answer was, I pointed at the story. And that, it sounds like such a simple answer, but it's one of the hardest things to do, because, you know, it's very easy to be distracted with sort of the shiny objects and not focus on what the actual story is. But with Fargo, it's much simpler, because the story is so clear and there's such beautiful clarity in the writing that, you know, following the story becomes the fun of the day.
Director of photography Craig Robeski has the wonderful privilege of working on not one, but two of the most acclaimed shows currently on any network, specifically FX. That's Fargo, which is on Wednesday night at 10 p.m. on that network, and Leech, which ran early this year and has already been acclaimed as one of the best new series of 2017. Craig joins us live from Calgary, Canada, where Fargo is filmed. This half hour on Tomorrow will be televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York, 89 degrees at the top of the hour. By the way, the weather is expected to be much cooler and much brighter this coming weekend. By the way, I want to let you know, I want to give a shout out to the folks behind the New York Dance Parade. It's a parade that takes place starting its second decade tomorrow at 1 o'clock at the corner of 21st and Broadway here in Manhattan, where more than 10,000 dancers, yours truly among them, will be going down Broadway all the way to Tompkins Square Park. It promises to be a one sensational event. And for the first time this year, no matter where you are across the country, you can see the New York Dance Parade on NTD TV, that's New York Tank IT Television, either if you have NTD on your local cable or satellite system, or you can catch it online at YouTube, Facebook, or NTD.TV. By the way, also tomorrow night, the Peabody Awards will be taking place live from Cipriani Wall Street. Atlanta and Better Things, by the way, two other FX series are going to be winning this year. We hope to see Donald Glover there. Walls is working on the new Deadpool animated comedy that FXX is going to run either later this fall or sometime next year. And that will be running on PBS and other places as well in June. Anyway, Craig, before we get to Legion, we've seen so much advancement in television cinematography. It's like you can't go anywhere without seeing cinematic things, cinematic looks, feel. on television these days, not what the TV series is. What do you think is responsible for that, especially with scripted drama? What do you think is responsible for this very cinematic look that television's getting?
Well, I think it's a really challenging and rewarding time to be in television for that very reason. I mean, the challenges obviously come, you know, with creating basically feature film production value on a television schedule and budget. But I attribute the change in the audience's perception largely to the way they consume the media. I mean, it used to be that if you went to the movies, you'd buy a ticket, you'd sit in the theater, and you would have certain expectations looking at that big screen about what is going to be presented to you. And then when you went home to watch television, you would sit in your couch and you would have different expectations about what that screen will present to you. And I think those lines are blurred now by virtue of the fact that people are consuming their media now in all forms. I mean, movies, they'll watch movies on their phone, they'll watch movies on their iPad, they'll watch television on their phone, they'll watch television on their iPad or their laptop. And I think the audience doesn't necessarily differentiate anymore between a movie and television. I think they have the same expectations of what will be presented to them, regardless of the medium. And you certainly see that with the performers that are appearing on television now as well. I mean, you've got, you know, traditionally what would have been feature film actors, someone like Ewan McGregor, for example, doing a television show like Fargo. But that's because the material is so strong, and I think the audiences are just so hungry for great stories that they don't really differentiate where they get those stories from, and they also don't differentiate their expectations. But that puts the challenge on the filmmakers to be presenting cinematic imagery regardless of their schedule, regardless of their budget, because the reality is the audience, I don't think they really care what your budget is or what your schedule is. They want to be presented imagery that they can be absorbed in and given a world that they can just disappear into, whether they're in the theaters or at home on their couch.
Incidentally, we want to let you know that originally Craig was going to be joined by another top cinematographer, Rob McLaughlin, whose credits include Game of Thrones and HBO's critically acclaimed new series from earlier this fall season, and that is Westworld. He is currently working on Ray Donovan, which starts its latest season on Showtime in a few weeks. Unfortunately, we learned a few hours ago that Ray had been called into a meeting with the Ray Donovan people. He wasn't sure when he was going to be able to come out, but we are going to reschedule him, hopefully, for either next Monday or next Friday. So, Robert, thanks for letting us know, and we're sorry you couldn't be with us today. I'm looking forward to having you on, hopefully next week right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Craig, let's get to Legion. It's an amazing series because it's not just about a character, but it's about getting inside the mind of a character. Did Noah Hawley give you any ground rules about how to do this?
Well, he made it very clear that he wanted to, whenever possible, keep the story subjective to David's experience, which was critical in terms of attaching the audience to him as a character because, you know, despite all the fantastic and incredible elements that go into an episode of Legion, the show is ultimately about relationships. There's a love story at the core of it, and it's about a relationship between all of these outcasts and misfits and them finding their way through the world together. So, you know, that's always job one on Noah Hawley show, is to make the characters relatable to the audience and to make the audience care about them. So that was rule number one, was, you know, make it subjective to David's experience whenever possible. The interesting thing about my episodes, two of them anyway, was that David was trapped in the astral plane for the better part of two of the episodes. So, you know, it was difficult to make it subjective to him. But, you know, the core thing was to always keep in mind point of view and whose scene it is. For example, in episode six, which is essentially a retelling of the first episode, but from Sid's point of view, it became a matter of always relating the camera to Sid and making sure that we were presenting the story from her point of view to the audience.
Mm-hmm. And what made that show, I think, really tick with a lot of critics and also with a lot of viewers was that you never knew at various points whether it was your viewpoint that was being put on that screen or the main character's viewpoint or somebody else's viewpoint. Because if there were times when you really had to adjust where you were coming from, and I'm sure for you, Craig, where you were coming from in terms of your work.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, I'm not ashamed to admit that there was a lot of confusion about where we were at certain times, but that was part of the journey of it, and that was part of what made it such a special experience. I mean, it's rare to work on material that actually alters your worldview and changes how you see the world around you, and Legion was certainly one of those shows where, you know, you read the scripts and you start to realize that, you know, what is this reality we're surrounded with? How much of this reality that we live in is a fabrication in our mind, and how much is really real? How much is tainted by our personal experiences? You know, it really draws into question, you know, the big picture question of what is real, which was a great visual element to play with, because you could always keep the audience on their back foot at some level by playing with this notion of what is real. And what is real to which person? You know, I mean, in episode 6, for example, there's the door that keeps appearing and disappearing, and some people see it and some people don't. And it just really puts those questions in the audience's mind. And I think that's what really kept them engaged and leaned forward in this whole experience, was they just wanted to try and understand this world on an emotional level and on a physical level. And that's what made it a lot of fun visually.
Honestly, part of the director of photography's job, or cinematographer, is to work with the camera people, work with a director, work with the writer, sometimes that writer being the series creator or executive as Noah is, on both Fargo and Legion. But I wonder if you also do a lot of work with film editors, and also a lot of work with composers. For example, Jeff Russo, who is the award-winning composer for Fargo, who we had in our show the first season, liked to say that one of the things he was inspired by in terms of composing scores was the cinematography. For example, in the first episode, he opens with this very grand, symphonic, you know, majestic opening for this snowy scene that Billy Bob Thornton takes his car on. And then the next episode is this very jazzy drum solo that's extended as a different car goes down a different highway, broad daylight, down one of the streets. And I'm curious whether, do you have a lot of, relationship with the film editor or the composer as much as you do with the writer, director, and your camera people?
Well, it's an interesting thing, because I was just in Los Angeles last week, and I actually met Jeff Russo for the first time, even though we've been working together very directly, but yet indirectly, for years on the season 2 of Fargo, and then Legion, and then season 3 of Fargo. And it was a really, I mean, it was, we instantly had so much to talk about, and it's because we have this shared experience. And I actually don't have much direct contact, if any at all, with someone like Jeff or even the editors as we shoot. I mean, I'll get in touch with the editors if there's a technical question or something specific to discuss, but you know, I always feel though that we communicate with each other very clearly, even though we barely speak, because we speak through the imagery. And, you know, it's always my hope as a cinematographer that the intent of what we're doing on set is clear in the imagery, and that we're speaking with a clear voice so that anyone who looks at that imagery can understand the core of what we're trying to do. And someone like Jeff is so brilliant at looking at the imagery and interpreting an incredible score over that always supports it perfect tonally. And, you know, we always joke on set, you know, just wait till Jeff gets his hands on this, you know, because we have a sequence where we know we have a lot of really amazing visuals, and then we know the editor is going to really dig in and understand what we're trying to do. And then Jeff puts that final touch on it that just takes it to an emotional level that is beyond anything that we could have hoped for. So it's a really fascinating relationship, because we all work extremely closely together and rely on one another, but very few words are spoken, which I guess is, you know, if a picture is worth 1,000 words, it saves us a lot of breath.
Before we wrap, Craig, what are people in your field talking about in terms of what you see the next level of television cinema being, if you will? Is it the ability to virtual reality, 360-degree episodes? Is it the idea of shooting choose your own adventure or choose your own outcome programming? Is it the use of micro cams or GoPro cams or drones, which we're starting to see, drone shots? What do you see? What do your colleagues also see as like the next big breakthrough, the next big challenge to deal with?
Well, the technology is advancing so quickly, and it's it's so intuitive the way the technology is advancing. I mean, one of the things I find amazing is how much collaboration there is between people that are on the cutting edge of this technology to create tools that work on a practical level incredibly well, but are also so inventive and actually inspiring, where you can look at a tool and say, well, we could do this with that, and, you know, we can take things to the next level. And the technology is evolving as the language of cinema is evolving, and they're sort of pushing each other. And it's a fantastic time to be a cinematographer, because there are so many tools and so many options. And it's really difficult to see where it's going. I mean, there's been a lot of experiments with very immersive technologies like VR, or, you know, extreme widescreen imagery where it just puts the audience right in the middle of it. But I do believe, and, you know, I don't want to sound like a Luddite for saying so, but I think the biggest challenge and what the audience really wants is to just be drawn into the story. And if that means using VR technology, if that means putting them in a 360 environment, if that means allowing them to choose their own storylines, then more power to it. But ultimately, if people, you know, at the end of their long, hard day, they just want to sit down and disappear into another world. And however we do that is up to us. But the technology is certainly proceeding in a way that gives us so many options to do that, and so many different ways we can approach it, that it's just such an exciting time to be a storyteller.
And two other things, incidentally, that are also helping things along: the growth of ultra-high-definition television sets and technology and cameras, and also high dynamic range, which is a way to get more color or more nuance in color into individual shots. You can catch the latest season of Fargo, Season 3. It's a great one. Wednesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on FX. Check your local info where FX is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program and also Legion Online, here's where you go: www.fxnetworks.com. That's www.fxnetworks.com. Our guest deals as director of photography on both series. Chris Webke, thank you again for joining us. A pleasure to have you on. Congratulations on the wonderful work you and your colleagues are doing with Fargo and with Legion. Best, of course, to Noah Hawley and the rest of the cast and crew, and all the greatest to you as you continue down the road.
Well, thanks so much. I hope we can do this again sometime.
I'd love it. It's a pleasure. Thanks again, Craig. Take care. Have a wonderful weekend.
You as well. Enjoy.
Chris Webke, director of photography on Fargo and Legion, joining us live from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Once again, we're sorry that we could not be joined this afternoon by Robin McLaughlin, whose cinematography work of late includes Game of Thrones, Westworld, and now currently Ray Donovan, coming back for a new season soon on Showtime. We are going to reschedule him, hopefully, for sometime next week, either next Monday or next Friday. In a moment, a comment on Roger Ailes. But first, we have our classic trivia question of the week to get to. We didn't do it this week because of all the stuff I've been involved with here in New York with Upfronts and Digital Content New Fronts and so on, and doing a lot of writing for the folks at Media Village and covering things for this program and BK Live. But we will be back on Monday with our latest question, and if you're first with the right answer, hopefully we will have a prize. So tune into our show Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, and get involved. Play our classic trivia question of the week. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Please enclose your name and where you're from. First correct answer wins. Maybe wins a prize along the way. If you missed the question on Monday, no problem. I'll post it on Tuesday morning on my Facebook page and on my own Twitter hashtag at UBCSimonTWBT. That's at UBCSimonTWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in, so please do so, and all the very best. I'll tell you what, because we have another guest coming shortly, we will save the Roger Ailes remembrance for after the interview in the next half hour. When we come back, PBS is in the midst of a very unique musical journey, one of the most unique it's ever had. It's called American Epic, narrated by Robert Redford, and joining us momentarily, director of that series, Bernard McMahon. We will hear from him after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. You are connected to the best internet radio in the universe. It's www.blogtalkradio.com. Well, the 25 main listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for Ray Mostyn from the gang at We Talk Radio. Check it out today, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, 2 hours from now, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, you can catch our program and other BTR shows anytime you like on Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. If you don't have Apple TV, go to an Apple store near you, or order it online. Welcome back for the final half hour of Smartly Televised, 90th edition coming your way today. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. 89 degrees right here and now in the greater New York area, but it's going to get a lot nicer in terms of temp and humidity around 67 degrees over the next 48 hours. And again, I want to congratulate all the folks in the New York Dance Parade doing their thing. I'll be part of that, by the way, tomorrow starting at 1 p.m. on the corner of 21st and Broadway. Ribbon cutting ceremony, incidentally, 15 minutes earlier than that. Anyway, great guests coming your way in the next half hour. We invite you, as always, to be in the conversation. So give us a ring, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04, Benengas 1247 is in the room. You'll find that room, by the way, on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. As I mentioned a moment ago, coming up later in the half hour, a remembrance of Roger Ailes. And we're going to go beyond the Fox News channel. There's a lot more you can remember him for, some of it really, really outstanding. But first, PBS is in the middle of a unique miniseries, one of the most unique it's done in recent years. It's called American Epic. It's narrated by Robert Redford, and it deals with a very unusual side of the jazz age in the 1920s. Joining us live, an interview exclusive, the director of this miniseries, whose next episode premieres next Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Pacific time on most PBS stations, Bernard Mittman. Bernard, we're delighted to have you with us. And let me see if we can get Bernard. Hold on for 1 second. I believe we now have him. Bernard, are you there? Hello. All right, let's try one more time. I believe this will be the charmer. Let's see. Bernard Mittman, are you with us? Hello, hello. Okay, Bernard, apparently, let me see. Let's try one more time. Let's see if he is finally up. No, he's not. Okay, Bernard, give us a call back. 646-652-2906, and we will get you on the air. That's 646-652-2906. We have a little bit of a tech gap, but we'll get it solved. So give us a call back if you can hear me, and we will get you back on the air. We can tell you that American Epic is a three-part miniseries on PBS. First part was on last week. Second part is on this coming week, Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Pacific time on most PBS stations. Third part will be the following Tuesday night. And then there'll be a special feature-length presentation called the American Epic Session, which will be on June 6th at 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. And if you want more details about this unique miniseries that takes place during the 1920s, you can go to pbs.org or you can go to a special website, www.americanepic.com. That's www.americanepic.com. This series is narrated by Robert Redford, and if you think that the jazz age was just all about jazz, you have a very surprising and I think very delightful thing coming if you see this series. All right, we're waiting Bernard Mittman to come back on the line, and when he does, we will get him on the air. So, Bernard, if you hear me, give us the call, 646-652-2906, and we'll put you on the air. Simple as that. And while we're waiting, I want to let you know that coming up Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we'll introduce you to a new website that may have the future of television there before your eyes. It's called Starable. That's S-T-A-R-E-A-B-L-E. It's a website that showcases both pilots for television series and online web series. And we've got the person who puts it together. His name is Ajay Kishore. And he not only does this website, but here in New York, he does events that showcase some of the individual pilot makers that are available through Starable. So be sure to join Starable founder AJ Kishore. That's Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Also, we hope to have either Monday or Friday, Ron McLaughlin, the cinematographer on Game of Thrones, Westworld, and currently Ray Donovan, starting its new season soon on Showtime. And also coming up next Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we hope to have one or two editors from TechCrunch who had their annual Disrupt New York conference earlier this week near the South Street Seaport. We'll find out what they have to say about the growing force of smart TV sets, smart devices, and where they see TV going with things like ultra-high definition, more apps on devices like Apple TV, Google Chromecast, and so on, and even virtual, you know, meta reality through the television set. So as soon as we get that, we will be happy. So again, we're waiting for Bernard Mittman, the director of American Epic, whose second episode of three will be running this coming Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Pacific time on PBS. So while we wait for Bernard to come on the air, let's do that comment in remembrance of Roger Ailes. By now you know that Mr. A passed away about a day and a half ago at the age of 77. We now know that it was from a fall, a block cut may have been involved also, that happened to him recently. got him into a coma, and then he passed away at his home in Los Angeles, his home surrounded by family and close friends. A lot of the remembrance that you see on television, especially on Fox News Channel, has been about his involvement with that network and the fact that Roger was a champion of the kind of news service he did. And yet, it was nearly a year ago that he was forced to resign his post as the head of Fox News and Fox Business Network because of the allegations of sexual harassment, a situation that continues to be investigated. But I think it would be a big mistake if his career was just, as far as television is concerned, just about his work with Fox News Channel, tremendous as it was, or Fox Business Network. Consider that before all of that, in the mid-1960s, he was one of the founders of the talk variety show as we came to know it. First in Cleveland and then in Philadelphia, together with fellow executive producer Woody Frazier, he was the person in charge of the Mike Douglas Show, a show that was unlike any talk variety show coming out of local television and syndicated coast to coast to that point. For one thing, he took a show that was, you might say, in a unique format, and he changed the format around. He made it must-see television. He really did. He made it must-see television. Why? For one reason, he decided to come up with the idea of the guest co-host, who would accompany Mike Douglas for an entire week. And that guest co-host could be anybody from Jerry Lewis to Sammy Davis Jr. to, very memorably, John Lennon and Yoko Ono. So every day became a day to see, like, how would these co-hosts be used? Would they perform? Would they be involved in various segments? Who would join them as guests? And how would they interact with Mike? Mike was a wonderful ringmaster. He was a pretty fair singer, but he was a wonderful host, made everyone feel welcome, no matter what their point of view was, no matter their lot in life. And the show, as I said, must-see television. First out of Cleveland, and then for many years out of Philadelphia, as it went from the 60s into the 1970s. Ran for over a decade, and Ailes was involved with it for most of its 1960s run, before he got involved with someone who would become president, Richard Nixon. And then in the 1990s, after working with the likes of Nixon and Ronald Reagan and other major Republican political figures, Ailes returned to television, first with CNBC and then with America's Talking. He tried to create all-talk television. It ran for two seasons, and then when MSNBC was born out of a relationship between NBC News and Microsoft, Ailes was wanting very much to continue his relationship as the head of that network. But no, MSNBC turned him down. And that turned out to be maybe one of the most fateful decisions in recent television history. Why? Because at the time, Fox News Channel was being born. And then it gave Rupert Murdoch and company the freedom to hire Roger Ailes to run that network. And the rest, of course, you know. But during his time with CNBC and at America's Talking, Ailes was able to put his own innovations in, including doing his own talk show for over a year. A talk show where he would be on every night talking to unique people from all walks of life. And as it turned out, Mr. A was quite a good interviewer. I believe there are still some segments of that show somewhere on YouTube, and I think if you check them out, you might be surprised. I hope that in the tributes to come, where Roger A's life is dissected in full, that what he did on the Mike Douglas Show for Talk Variety Television, what he did for CNBC, what he did for America's Talking, which became MSNBC, will not be put to the side. Because it makes clear that no matter what kind of flaws that Mr. Ailes had, particularly later in his life, one thing that was clear and consistent was that Roger Ailes was an innovator, maybe one of the great innovators in terms of network television, maybe one of the great innovators in terms of television. And whatever he innovated, he stood behind it 100%. Never veered off. Never backed down. Believed in the project 100%. And that's a character trait that is quite notable and, to a nice degree, quite laudable. And as the former Beth Tilson at CNBC, who later became Ailes' wife for most of his later life, had said, you should take him at her word that he was a wonderful father, a patriot, and someone who deeply cared in where this country was going and what it could be, and where television was all about and where it could be. Obviously, there will be a lot of judgment about Roger Ailes, especially the last couple of years in life. But again, no denying that this person was a doer and a thinker and an innovator in putting on greater quality television, whatever the genre. And that's quite laudable and deserves to be part of his record. All right, we're going to give Bernard McMahon one more chance to come on the air. And if we don't, we will reschedule him, hopefully for sometime next week. We'll wait another 30 seconds, and if not, we will call it a show. I want to get my voice straight here. By the way, you may have noticed that I have a bit of a scratchy voice today, thanks to a bit of a cold, which I'm getting over very quickly. So I thank you for bearing with that in the course of today's program, particularly our interviews with our other guests. Okay, it looks like we are not going to be able to get Bernard McMahon from American Epic on, so I do want to let you know that you can see the second episode of the three-part miniseries next Tuesday, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, over many public television stations. As always with PBS, you have to check your local listings not only for the PBS station in your area, but also when they run the program. Many PBS stations delay the program till later in the week or run it on the weekends. And also, many PBS stations do replays of a show on the weekends as well. But once again, most PBS stations will run American Epic Part 2 next Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. And then coming up 2 weeks from then, the American Epic Sessions, a feature film which showcases the music of this very unique project. And that's on June 6th at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, 3-hour movie, both miniseries and movie narrated by Robert Redford. For more details about the program online, go to www.pbs.org. And for more details about American Epic in general, both the miniseries and the movie, the American Epic Sessions, go to AmericanEpic.com. It's AmericanEpic.com. Big thank you to our other guests for being with us today. Sarah Gubbins from I Love Dick on Amazon, and Craig Lubetsky from Fargo and Legion. My name is Marty Televised, Ajay Kishori, the founder of Sterable, that's Sterable, the new showcase for TV pilots and web series. And we hope, again, to have from Game of Thrones and Westwood and Rhea Donovan, Rob McLaughlin, cinematographer on all three shows, with us either next Monday or Friday, next Friday. We also hope to have somebody, one or two people from TechCrunch, talking about the state and current future of television. If you came on today's show late, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while you're at it, you can spend time this weekend checking out our podcast. It's available 24/7 at iTunes.com and also on Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. Either way, you can download to your smartphone, tablet, other electronic device, and, of course, share it with others as well. I hope you do. Or take us on the go if you're traveling this wonderful weekend before Memorial Day weekend. Okay? We love hearing from you, too. So drop us a note. We love hearing. We'd like to hear what you thought about today's show and what your thoughts are, where TV is at and where it is headed, whatever your thoughts are. We do appreciate them. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. That same homepage, that same email is where you get involved in our classic trivia question of the week. You also get involved in our regular feature of Show to Know. Is there a TV show that you think deserves enough attention and it's not getting any? Well, if we talk about it because of you, you, of course, will get the credit. That's the way we like to do things around here. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. You'll also find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's UBC Simon TWBT. By the way, again, I want to give a shout-out to the organizers of the Peabody Awards. Their event takes place with more than 30 winners, including Norman Lear, tomorrow night at Cipriani's Wall Street. It's always a marvelous thing. I'll be on the red carpet and also be in the press room for that. And then the program will be showcasing a 90-minute special coming to PBS and elsewhere in June. So check that out. Again, congratulations to all the Peabody winners. Congratulations also to the organizers of the New York Dance Parade, also happening tomorrow. If you're in the New York area, come on by and see us. I'll be dancing with the folks at USA Dance starting around 1:30 local time. So if you're in the New York area neighborhood, it's supposed to be a gorgeous day. So come on down along the parade route or anywhere you are around the country. Check the New York Dance Parade out for the first time on national television on NTD, New Tang Dynasty Television. If you don't have NTD available in your area on cable and satellite, check it out on YouTube or go to www.ntd.tv. Remember, we love hearing from you because what you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. Annie Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonnenberg, executive content producer. The co-founders of this very enterprise are Al Levy. Tomorrow's show live is brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. Remember, for a free 30-day trial and free audiobook, audibletrial.com/televised. And find out why Audible will transform the way you hear the world. But tomorrow we televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic weekend, no matter where you are, nationwide or worldwide. Again, if you're in New York, join us for the New York Dance Parade. Catch the Peabody Awards also. And catch us for sure next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio. Whatever you are up to, please be safe and be great. And until next time, stay well and stay tuned.